We were here 4 years ago, not here, but we were together at DTC to talk about the topic that we're going to address the next 3 days. And actually, I don't know if you've caught it or not, or anybody's passed it on to you, but we actually have a pattern of stuff we try to share with you as growing young men and women seeking to understand who God has made you and what God wants for your life. We try to pass on the things that have really touched our own lives. We try to pass on the things that have really made a difference in our own world. And I figured out, for a lot of you guys, I have lived over 4 of your lifetimes. So you could look at me and go, the guy has been around the block. And that would be true. And I feel like that has really helped me understand things that make a difference and things that don't. And one of the things I'm really, really thankful for in my early Christian life is that believers who came before me helped me understand how to live out God's perspective of what we are going to talk about this week. And our subjects in DTC, we start off with Christian identity. And we sort of did that last year up here at Faith Camp, if you were part of it. And we said we did it to whatever degree, but we had it mixed up with Faith Camp. Next year, it'll be related to apologetics, how to answer hard questions about our faith. And then after that, it'll be how to engage serving people around us with the message of God's truth and bringing that into our world. But today, this week, we're talking about a subject that actually, interestingly enough, is way more controversial this year than it was 4 years ago. And we are engaging with something that our world seems to have more and more different perspectives of. But let me just tell you why I think this matters for each one of us, for every one of you guys, is that you are here, our high schoolers. You got some really exciting things ahead of you. You're headed for college probably, or that age anyway, and between ages 18 and 24, you're going to set the major significant patterns of your life. And pretty much for the rest of your life, you will live out those patterns. You're headed for the most significant shaping years of your adult life. Then after that, you will probably, for most of you, you'll enter into marriage, you'll get married, you'll fight with your own teenagers, then you'll get to be about my age, and you'll eventually start experiencing health problems, and then you'll die. And then you'll find yourself standing before Jesus Christ. You will be standing before God. And it will be more clear than ever before in your life what your life was all about and what your life was for. And you know, one of those things that I am certain will be crystal clear to you on that day, for about half of you, what will be crystal clear to you is it will be, God made me as a man. God made me to express His image in this world as a man. And you will see that with crystal clarity. You will know that's who you are and who you were and who God made you to be. And for the other half of you, it will be utterly real that you are a woman, that God made you as a woman, in your deepest core, the place He wanted to walk with you, the place He wanted to meet you, the place He wanted to teach you about Himself, was in large measure in that identity as a woman. And you know what's amazing? If that's true for you, it's true for every single person on the planet. They're all going to roll into God's presence, look into the face of Jesus Christ, and understand that they were made for a purpose to represent the image and the nature and the character of God. That's why you were given your life. That's why you have it. And in that, you and I find our greatest fulfillment. In that, you and I experience who we really are. When you are really enjoying being you, it's when you're closest to living out what God made you to be. Now, the world has different ideas about this subject we're going to talk about today. So, who's the guy that's ahead of Facebook? What's his name? What's the name of that one guy? Mark Zuckerberg. Now, I Googled this, and of course, the internet is always completely right, and so it gave me three different answers. I'm sure one of them is right. How many genders are on Facebook? Well, according to Google, it's 51, 58, or 71. One of those is the case. And, you know, I'm in a circle of people that don't view life that way. And, you know, we can sort of poke fun at that and go, well, that's kind of weird. That's kind of crazy. Wow, how dumb can the world get? But you know what? Actually, that's probably just an expression of incredible humility. Somewhere, one day, on Mark Zuckerberg's desk, there was a paper that he had to okay. And that paper said, we're going to put X number of genders on Facebook. And Mark Zuckerberg had to go, okay. Why did he do that? Maybe because he's a very humble man. Because Mark Zuckerberg goes, I have no idea how many genders there are. Who am I to say how many genders there are? That's not my business to say how many genders there are. And he's exactly right. How in the world do we know? How do we know? I mean, maybe there's this long tradition through history, but history's been wrong a lot of times. How do we know? And so, you and I, if we're going to hold a view on that, we need to be able to say, hey, here's why I hold my view. Here's how it all makes sense to me. Here's how it comes together in my mind. Here's what I am confident is true and that I build upon. And so you're going to hear people share over the next 3 days. Here's what it means to live as a man. Here's what it means to live as a woman. And what they're going to be telling you about is they're going to be telling you a picture of manhood and of womanhood. And more, it's clear that that picture only comes from one place, out of a book. And that's what we're going to look at here at the very beginning. When we talk about gender, we obviously start off with a perspective, right? How many genders are there? Looks like there's either they couldn't get anything else on the t-shirt or we're thinking there's only two. Why do we think that? Where does that come from? And more important than that, what are they? What are they? If I am male, if I am a man, what is that? What is going to be so clear to me on that day? What is Jesus going to ask me about? What are we going to talk about? What am I going to see? If you are a woman, there's so many definitions of womanhood today, and almost all of them are dead wrong. So what does it mean? What is it? Is there anything special about it? Is there anything to find in your heart an incredible sense of value and significance? Well, if it comes from where we're talking about, there sure should be. And that's what we're going to look at. But I want to start not with that, but I want to start for me. I'm just going to walk through all this stuff in the way that it makes sense to me. And I think we're all different. So since I'm sharing this from my perspective, you might track with it a little differently. But I'm going to share with you how it all rolls together for me. And for me, it starts with God. I got to go, okay, so what do I believe about God? And I heard a quote recently that meant a lot to me. It's from a guy who was in prison in Romania under communism. And he, as he went through all his challenges and watched the world around him change and the church struggle with different things, and he quoted actually somebody else. He said this, I realized that there was two kinds of people. Those who sincerely believed in God and those who just as sincerely believed that they believed. And when I heard that quote, it really caused me to ask myself, okay, do I believe in God or do I just sincerely believe I believe? And it's really good to ask yourself that, because you go down inside and you find something. Do I believe? And I just want to share with you guys, as young people, you can have, there's ways your faith can be incredibly strong and incredibly clear, just like David's was and many young believers in the Bible were. And then there's also ways you're going to grow and it's going to develop. And I know for me, there is an incredible sense I get of God's reality that just washes over me as I connect with the creation. One of the things I like to do is I like to ride a motorcycle. I like to ride a motorcycle through the mountains. And I sort of had to hope I'd get to ride it up here, but Roger had too much stuff for me to carry, so I couldn't. But seeing what God has made. I was just walking around out there. You guys may have seen him too, but there's a little fawn out there. He's got those little white spots on the side of him. And when he sees you, he just stands just completely stiff, still, And then all of a sudden he bounded away. You know, when they do that weird bounce, boom, boom, boom. And I go, God, why doesn't that run like a horse? Why did you make it that way? You just like it, don't you? You just like it. God, you're so creative. And more, to me, nature becomes that still small voice. I was walking around out there and I found this feather. I don't know what it's from. If you're an engineer, you might know that feathers are astonishing structures. They're one of the strongest structures to their weight known to man. The whole idea of Velcro came off of things off of this feather. And it's got this amazing side that kind of radiates orange, and the other side's got a little orange, the spine, but the rest of it's black and white. And I look at that and I go, I don't know what bird this is from, but that bird is probably beautiful. And he probably looks really different when he flaps his wings. And I go, God, it didn't have to be like that. You're just wild. And the guy that made this made you. And you know, by faith, the person that made this feather. If you're a Christian, you believe you have a relationship with the one that made this. That's kind of wild. That makes God pretty close. I like that. And when I look at this, I go, whoever made this, I trust him. Whoever made those trees and those flowers and the beauty of the mountains and all that amazing stuff out there, whoever that was, I trust him. He's good and he's right. And I lock in on that. So I'm going to let you guys just pass this around. And when you hold it, look at it, see how cool it is. And just think about the one that made this knows you and you know him. So when I look at nature, I go, okay, I got a guy that I trust. I do trust him. I do trust him. What he does is good. What he does is amazing. And then I look in the book that he wrote. He tells me something about himself. And he tells me that he is love. God is love. It is the one characteristic of himself that he says fully defines him. He doesn't say he's loving. He says, listen, I am love. means that whenever God enters a situation, the only way he can enter is in what he is. The only way he can engage with you, he's stuck. Is there anything that God can't do? Yes. He cannot enter a situation and not be loving. He can't. Because he is love. Every time he rolls into the world, it's like, that's what's there. It's what he is. And when I hear that, and I realize, well, that means that love desires to bring all that good to me. That love wants to bring it into my world. That love is proactively extending that goodness to me. Wow. And it makes me trust him even more, and it makes me expectant. That means God has good for me. Whenever God engages with me, the closer I get, the more we interact, the more we connect, the more I'm going to experience good, because God is love. He's good, he's right, and he's love. Now, when I read the book, I learn that God is even more than love, because there's something we learn as we read the book. And it tells us some kind of unique aspect of God's love. And it has incredible significance. And let's see, could anybody guess, if we were to think through dimensions of God that relate to love, that maybe even take it farther than that, what would we come up with? Any ideas? Beyond love. Love specifically, love expressed. What's love expressed? Love expressed. Every time you express love. Yeah, Sarah?
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice. That would be true. That's how it's expressed. Yep. Of course, I'm the pastor up here. That means I just keep fishing until I get the answer I want. That's how that works. Yeah.
Grace.
What? Grace. Okay, that's again how God does it. But if we were to talk about it being done, it happens in a relationship, right? Okay? Because God has, what is true about God? How are God and relationship go together? This is that theological word that's nowhere in the Bible, but we know it's true. What's the theological word that's nowhere in the Bible, but we know it's true? Trinity. Yes. So God's love. And guess what's happening in God all the time? This is so amazing. This is so cool. What has always, always, always been happening, and what always, always, always will be happening? Loving relationship will be happening in God. That's what's going on there. And when I think about that, that God is good and right, that he's loving, and that he's relationship. And by the way, I'm supposed to be clicking this off here. Oops, I'm sorry. Did I do that? Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Watch the screen. Okay. So God is relationship. So this is the essence of reality. The essence of reality. It's what always has been, what always will be. It's like there's this eternal party. There's just this party that's been going on and on and on. And do you understand in the love of God what he plans for us? Is an invitation to the party? Do you understand that's what it means to be a Christian? God is inviting you into the party? That's what the book tells us. That we were created to share in and experience, but he doesn't need us. It's not like, oh, I got to find somebody to love. Who am I going to love? No, he's got plenty. Within himself, there's perfect love. God is relationship. The guy who made that feather, they all had a lot of fun doing it. God, the Trinity, made that feather. Okay. So now, once we've gotten here, we can go to Genesis 1. And on the front of you, right in front of you somewhere, probably is Genesis 1:27. But the verse that comes before that is Genesis 1:26. Because where's Genesis 1:27? Where is it, guys? So we're surrounded by it. Where is it? It's on the back of your t-shirt. Just in case you didn't know. But Genesis 1:26 says this. Then God said, let us make man in our image. Let us make man in our image. So, what's going on there? God does something astonishing in that verse. Lots of astonishing things. But it's the only place in the whole creation account where he tells us, hey, I'm an us. I'm an us. I'm not just a me. I'm an us. I want you to know I'm an us. Let us make man in our image. And then he says, let's make a picture of us. Let's make a picture of us. It's like, this is their selfie. Hey guys, let's get together. We take a selfie? I'll take a selfie. Okay. All right. Okay. I'll make a funny face. Ooh, there we are. And then it says in 1:27, so in the image of God, he made him male and female. He made them. Whoa. So it says, hey, I'm an us, and I'm going to make a picture of us, and I'm making him, who really is not just a him, he's a them, and the them is male and female. I'm an us. Let's make a picture of the us. We're one, but we're not one. Let's make a one that's not one. Let's make a him who is a them, male and female. If you follow it through, and you read it over, nothing could be any more airtight than God is telling us something that we don't necessarily think through. The male and female captures the image of that us in God. Whoa. So what do I get out of that? Well, one, I get genders binary. Two genders. If I think God wrote the book, the guy should know he was there. Mark has a place he could go to find out how many genders there are. There are two. And they were made for a really profound purpose. They were made because somehow in them, something about God peeks out into the world. Something about God is revealed in the world. So that when I live as a man or you live as a woman, there's something that's supposed to come into the world that expresses some aspect of God. So I've already got it figured out. I know how many genders there are. There's two. They've got a super, super important purpose. They're the only thing about us that is told about us in the creation account. And we know they're different. Okay? How many of you guys just sort of have this natural sense that guys and girls are different? It doesn't take that long to where you're just going, that's what you think. You watch a set of two-year-olds, they're different. I had no sisters. I had no daughters. I have three granddaughters. They are really different. God made it so. And when we look at Genesis chapter 2, God unfolds, here's how that difference expresses me. So where I want you to be right now is if we believe that a good God wrote the book, that a good God wrote the book to prepare us to enter into his presence, that's what the book is for. It's to help you understand all that you need to know to enter into his presence. And in that book, we can know, oh, there are two genders. And they've got some really, really important purpose because they're the whole thing it's about in representing the image of God somehow. And it wasn't like he just wanted people to hang out together because he only made one man and one woman. So I'm going to try to make this real clear to you. I'm talking about male and female in relationship are my image. All right, so where do we go from there? Okay, I got that. Two genders, they somehow represent the image of God. The differences in them represent the image of God. Does that mean God's a male and female? God's a man and a woman? Our friends from Utah tell us some of their neighbors think that. The Mormons would believe that, there's male, female up there, and that's where we all come from, and it's all kind of strange. But is that what it's saying right there in the book? Theoretically possible. God could be anything. God could be true. But we read through the whole book, we understand what the book says, and we go, oh, it's not that, it's not that. It's not that God is male and female in some physical form. So God, what am I? What am I? How do I know? Well, let's look at something else about God. God also describes the us. Here's another way we see the us. So there's an us in God. There's a we in God. God's a we. God is plural. And here's another way he presents himself as an us. The Father loves the Son and has given all things into his hand. So God says, hey, I'm a we, and I'm coming to you as Father and Son. Now, is God the Father really a father in the way we think about fatherhood? Who came first, the Father or the Son? Any theologians here? Who came first, the Father or the Son? Who came first? So you guys are also going to learn theology. Who came first, the Father or the Son? Neither. No, they're co-eternal. It says that right in the book. Neither one of them came first. So here's the million-dollar question. If God the Father is not a father in the way we are, because my father preceded me and his father preceded him, and that's why they're called father, and I'm called son this way, and I'm called father this way, because I came first and they came next. If God the Father did not come first, why is he called God the Father? Why is he called God the Father? Why is there Father and Son in the Trinity? Might it be something about their relationship with each other? Could that be why God the Father is called God the Father? Because he relates to the Son in some perfect way representing a Father, and the Son relates to the Father in some perfect way representing a Son? So if you guys were to think of a perfect Father-Son relationship, perfect Father-Son relationship, what would characterize a perfect Father-Son relationship? What would a Father be like? What would the Son be like? Perfect. I mean, perfect. You could make a movie about it, and nobody's crying.
Trust.
Okay. Trust. And where do you think, which, so if we said here, probably going to knock this thing over again, but Son, Father. Now, there'd be some things that these relationships would have the same because they're relationship of love. But are there uniquenesses? Would you put trust on one side more than the other? Or trust in a different way? Okay. Sarah? The Son submits to his Father. He follows. He tracks with. That's what makes an amazing relationship there. So what else would be unique?
Unity.
Okay, so there'd be unity that would go in for both of them. That would be very true. Let me all do this. Yes. What else?
Selflessness.
What's that?
Selflessness.
Selflessness. For who? Are they both selfless?
Yes.
Okay, they're both selfless. That's great. Okay, what else? Sam?
Honesty.
Peter, honesty. Honesty. They're both honest? Absolutely.
Respect.
Respect. And would that go on one side or the other or the middle?
Kind of both, yes.
Kind of both? I think it would too. Yeah, you guys are doing great. Okay? Yeah.
Grace.
Okay, we go grace, love. Okay. And you guys are doing totally, completely awesome. But we're going to be here all night because I'm going to make you keep going until you give me blue things. I want to know what's unique. Is this relationship reflective where the Son does exactly the same thing for the Father that the Father does for the Son? Is the perfect Father exactly like the perfect Son? How are they different? Father, okay, he knows what's best. If in a perfect situation, knows and leads to that which is best? To the best. All right, so it isn't the Son leading the Father, it's the Father leading the Son. What else? Yeah.
Obedience,
and we kind of got that one, submits, follows, but the Son would obey. Yeah. I think you're saying that, or you say the Father obeys. No, the Son obeys. Yeah.
I would say the Father is inert and the Son's
involved. I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that.
Sorry. The Father leads and the Son follows.
The Father leads, the Son follows. Yep, and we got that. Knows and leads to the best. Knows and leads to the best, and he submits and follows. So yeah, we got that. Can you think of, is there any other things that might characterize it? Yeah.
The Father teaches the Son.
The Father teaches. Okay. Yeah, the Son doesn't teach the Father, so he learns from. All right, anything else that comes to your mind? Yeah.
The Son glorifies the Father.
The Son glorifies the Father. Okay, would you put that in the middle or one side or over here? Do they both glorify each other? That's kind of an interesting question, isn't it? I'm going to reserve that one because I'm going to say the Son glorifies the Father by obeying. And in the Bible, it says that the Father glorifies the Son by leading him into that which is good. So we could go, that would go in the middle. Anything else unique? Yeah.
Authority.
So the Father has authority. I don't want to presume too much here. Okay. Anything else? Yeah. The Father protects. That's a great word. Yeah, the Son doesn't protect the Father. The Father protects the Son. All right, any other ideas? Yeah.
No anger, no strife, no sin.
Middle side?
Middle.
Yeah, no strife. No strife, no anger. That's a great one. In a perfect relationship, perfect Father-Son relationship. All right. So let me walk out what I find in Jesus' relationship with God, with His Father. Because just catch this. I think the thing we're supposed to see more clearly than anything else in the life of Jesus is we're supposed to get a peek into this relationship within God. If we were going to ask, how does male and female capture what's in God? The first thing we have to answer is, well, what's in God? We start to look at Father and Son. Ooh, he also tells us he's a Father and a Son. He's not really a Father. He's not really a Son. He's not really a male. He's not really a female. But he's telling us something here. And when we try to figure out, so what do they do up there? What goes on up there? How are they, you know, how do they get along up there? There's one place we get to peek in. When we look at Jesus, we get to look at his relationship with his Father. And when we look there, what we see, Jesus said, by myself, I can do nothing. I judge only as I hear, and my judgment is just, for I seek not to please myself, but him who sent me. So Jesus said, hey, listen, I'm only down here to make my Father happy. That's the only reason I'm down here. And I'm not down here doing my own thing. I'm not down here running around figuring out myself. I don't do anything by myself. I only judge the way God speaks to me. Jesus said, I do nothing on my own, but speak just what the Father has taught me. There's our taught word. Going a little farther, he fell with his face to the ground and prayed, My Father, if it is possible, may this cup be taken from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. And we see Jesus living out a role with his Father. And what was his role? His role was, I am locked with you. I do not want to walk through this. I know you could change it. But if you do not, I will go. This is a very profound verse. Because you know what it tells me? In the end, Jesus did not die for me. In the end, he said, Father, I would not give up my relationship with you for them. I will only do it if you ask. I will not disobey you. I will do whatever you tell me to do. But it's you I'm doing it for. And we see that the Son unites with the Father. He entrusts himself to the Father. He finds his life within the sphere of the Father's will. When we look at Jesus over and over, when we look in the New Testament, we look in the Gospels, he says, hey, this is what I'm about. I am about tracking with him. That is my life. My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. That is God. Submitting, uniting, following. It is divine. It is the character of God's love. Okay, what about the Father to the Son? Well, we look at verses there. We say, as soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water. At that moment, heaven was opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting on him. And a voice from heaven said, This is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. At this point, Jesus hadn't done anything spiritual for the Father that we're told about. The Father initiates. And he says, I draw my circle around you. I include you. You are mine. I bless you. I pronounce love on you. I claim you in my sphere of love. Jesus said, the Father loves the Son. Jesus knew that and has placed everything in his hands. And so Jesus was totally united with the Father, but the Father put everything in Jesus' hands. The Father loves the Son and shows him all he does. And in Psalm 2, it says, I will proclaim the decree of the Lord. He said to me, You are my Son. Today I have become your Father. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. And so what's happening here is the Father leads the Son into good. Jesus runs the whole world. Jesus runs the whole universe. The Father says, I will lead you in the form of man to where you rightfully and in everything that's good, you deserve to lead it all. Because you walked in complete obedience, and I will lead you to that place. And I will grant that to you, and I will give up my own relationship with you to lead you to good. And I have a message I love to give where I make a really strong case that though Jesus gave his life, the Father gave up so much more in leading Jesus to good. You know, I've thought at times I believe I would die for God. Of course, we all have to get tested in that, but I think I would die for God. If God asked of me what he asked of Abraham, John, I want you to kill one of your sons. Or I want one of your sons. I want you to allow him to die for me. Allow him to die for me. I'd go, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I can do it. And yet the Father did it for us. So what we see here, this is where we want to go. The Father loves, cares for, blesses, affirms, accepts unconditionally. He provides all that is good. He takes responsibility for. He leads into that which is good and right. And so this is within God. This is what's going on in God. So in God, there are persons up there, and they don't relate to one another the same. They come together in this different way. Relationship within God is complementary. Wow. So what's going on up there right now is love going back and forth, and that love is complementary. Who can tell me what complementary means? What? It unites. And what was your first?
It adds to, it unites.
Yeah. It adds to. It's not, so we can go to our a picture here. God is love in 1 John 4:8, but not like this. Where we have two things that are equal, identical, the same, and they're together somehow in some sort of a relationship. That is not what's in God. And when that happens, there is nothing that draws together or connects or adds to, as was shared there. But it's more like this. It's two things that are different. And when they come together, something exists that was not there before. Something happens that could not happen with either one of them alone. Is the Father, could the Father be God without the Son? I have no idea how to answer that question. Could the Father be the Father without the Son? No. Could the Son be God without the Father? I don't know. Could the Son be the Son without the Father? No, it's what they are in relationship. The relationship reveals the love between them as they walk in these roles. Understanding that what is in God is complementary love. When that sinks into your brain, you go, well, that's what's up there. That's what's up there. It's complementary love. And then God's going to make His picture on the earth. Responsible for, responsible to. Caring for, entrusting to. Leading, uniting. And God's made this all over the earth. So God made parent-child relationships. The perfect relationship of a parent and child. One is responsible for, one protects, one cares for. God made that. God says, oh, I like that. Oh, let's make that picture over here. I want to make that right here. Let's make it here. We'll make their families look like this. And God made it here. Kings and subjects. God made that human institution. And when it's perfect, somebody is caring for, and somebody is uniting with. And when the perfect happens, as we call Jesus our King, we just sang that, when the perfect happens, it's beautiful because it's love in complementary relationship. But master-slave, master-servants, bond-servants. Why do I have that picture up there for slave? Anybody know? Yeah, Sarah, man, you're going to get a lot of points here.
In the law, there's a thing that says a person that's unwilling to stop being servant
to
somebody that
hears their ear. Yeah. That a servant could so want to remain under his master's care. The Bible has a provision for that, that he can go and the master can take an awl and poke it through his earlobe into the doorpost. And that's the servant saying, I want to belong to you till I die. And I want to serve you till I die. Life is better with you than anywhere else I can go. I want to track with you. That's what we are with God, right? We're all bondservants. You stepped into that whole thing. I'm a bondservant of God. I want to track with Him. I want to track with Him. I want to track with Him. That's existing within God. So when we look at God has made this picture all over the earth of responsible for and uniting with, He loves this picture, then He's going to do His very picture in the creation of man. And He's going to say, let us make man in our image. Okay, guys, let's make our picture here. in our likeness. So God created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him. Male and female, He created them. And this is what the Bible tells us. What is male and female? It's two places within human life that God has put these two potentials for uniting in relationship, where one initiates and takes responsibility and protects and cares for, and one unites with and supports and comes alongside. And of course, the place that happens in the most perfect way, the most perfect picture of the Creator God and all the planet, is when a man and a woman, one man and one woman, come together in a covenant relationship for life. And they say, we will be this picture together. So something comes into being that was not there before and could not be without both of them. And a marriage is its own thing. It's its own dance. And before the fall, it was going to be the perfect picture of God in the creation. There's never, ever been one of these pictures. But somehow, when Jesus comes back for His bride, there will be. So what do we learn here? Male and female were created as the expression of that us dimension, the us thing. The one place God calls Himself an us, He tells us He makes male and female. They're responsible for and united with parts, that yin and yang, the back and forth, the all care for you and you unite. Those dimensions of God's relational nature, they're part of the image of God in many relationships. God has made it all over in human life. He's filled it with this connection, even older brother and younger siblings, and caring for and responsible to, and He loves it. But they're most fully expressed in male and female in marriage. So that answers another question that's being asked today. What's marriage? Well, can two men get married? Can two women get married? No, they can't. They could have a legal, somehow a legal government relationship or a legal government ceremony. But Jesus said, what God has joined together. Marriage is what God has joined together. Will God join two men together? No, He won't do it. Will God join two women together? No, He won't do it. It's His deal. It's His deal. There's all kinds of human things that happen, but if you want to go, when you're standing before God and it's all over and there you are, He's going to say, well, guys, this is what marriage was. I made it. This is what it is. And that wasn't it. It's My image. One man, one woman, united together for life. Don't take it apart. What God has joined together, let man not separate. This is about My deal, says God. I made this. You will be blessed in it. You will enjoy it if you walk in it right. It will fill your life with richness. But this is My deal. I did this for Me. This is My picture. This is My selfie. This is Mine. So He created human life in two genders, housed in different biology. He did that because it helps us live out this expression of the nature of God, which exists in marriage and to some degree outside of marriage. And I won't take the time to go through it, but I did some research on how our brains are different. Oh my goodness. Let me just tell you one thing. You guys are doing really well because your brains do not produce as much serotonin, and serotonin helps you sit still. You don't have as much of that. So that beautiful sister beside you, she'll do a better job of sitting still because she gets more of that. There's all kinds of differences in your brains. I think they said there's 100 and some biological differences in the brains between male and female. God made us to live, see, experience, express life differently. We're housed in complementary sexuality. Sexuality doesn't define our gender, but it goes along with our gender. It's a subset of our gender. And God, in His wildness, the wildest thing God ever made was human sexuality. There have been times when, God, you should never have done that. You shouldn't have done that. Look at this mess. God says, I will not withhold good to those who walk in it just to protect those who do not from pain. And out of this image of God, male and female, there is the most profound human experience that anybody could ever imagine and anybody ever experiences. And out of that comes more human life, more of the image of God. These two genders are able to come together and form the closest possible picture of the relationship that's within God Himself. And the fullest expression of each gender is in what it can become in the presence of the other. So, it is interesting, right? We're just sort of hanging out, but then you enter into the presence of somebody of the opposite gender, and all of a sudden you're very aware of your gender. You never relate to somebody of the same gender the same way you relate to somebody of the opposite gender. It's always like, oh, okay, reset here. Now I'm talking to somebody of the other gender. It resets who I am. It's true for all of us. But each of us walks with God as a human being in the image of God and as a specific expression of His nature as male or female. So this is where I end this. We'll build on it in the next teaching. But let me just say this. We don't see God in human life unless we see the masculine and the feminine. And my dear brothers and sisters, there is a world that is calling you to erase that created part of who you are. And when you erase that, you erase something that's very beautiful to God and very personal to Him. And there's a place God wants to meet you, and He wants to walk with you, and He wants to lead you, and He wants to bring life to you. And it is in who you are as a man and who you are as a woman. And sometimes they can look very the same. They're both supposed to be honest, all the things in the middle over there, integrity and so many things, caring, loving, kind. But even there, how it looks is different. Your beauty is not mine, my dear sister. Your beauty is not mine. And my beauty of what it means to be masculine and to live in that dimension of God is not yours. But we can come together and reveal the fullness of God even as a church. And it's one of the things I so appreciated, learning how to relate to sisters in a way that was safe, where there could be real love that wasn't in danger of becoming something wrong or harmful. And Jesus wants to give us that richness, just like He gave us the feather, just like He gave us the fawn. He wants to give us that life. And we need to seek it. So let me pray here. Lord, I just pray that You would allow us to start with You. It's not about rules. It's not about just cold, hard descriptors of things. It's about You. And that's what You told us at the very beginning. This is Your picture. This is who You are. This is what You're doing. And You invite us into it. And You give us an identity, and You meet us in that identity. Lord, the world is just so, takes us so many places that are not where You want to meet us. Even in this room, I'm sure there's people with so many different thoughts, people with uncertainty about so many things about their own life. In this room, I am sure it is just, that's part of what we wrestle with in the fall. But thank You, there's an anchor. We can go, no, this is what's true. This is what will be true. This is how it's all going to end up. I can lock in here. This is okay. I can believe in this identity just like I can believe in God. I can believe in this identity just like I can believe in God. God gave me this. I'm going to ask you to do something now that may be easy, or maybe something that is so hard you're not sure you can do it. But I just want you to close your eyes and be before God. And I want you to thank God for your gender as a man or as a woman. I want you to thank God that He can meet you there, that He can make it rich and deep, that He can enable you to find yourself and grow in who you are. Jesus would be so pleased with this session if every heart and every voice could look into His face and say, thank you. Thank you, God. I just want to ask you right now, come before God and in your heart speak those words. Lord, thank you for the strength that rolls into our life as we move towards you. You are love, so to be near to you is a good thing. Pray to help us the next 3 days. Help us to hear your voice. Help us to invite you to sit beside us in every session. Just Jesus, sit right here. Just sit right here beside me. Help me connect with all this. Tell me, Lord, what of this is for me. In Jesus' name, amen.